We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, House of Hardcore listeners, the House of Hardcore podcast is one of the many podcasts here on the Gas Digital Network. Gas Digital has a massive on-demand library of thousands of hours of your favorite podcasts and shows, all in full HD, ad-free, and uncensored. As a Gas Digital member, you get a unique user profile, access to the new live chat during a show's premiere, and all the newest full-length episodes of your favorite Gas Digital shows days before they come available to the public. Sign up to GasDigitalNetwork.com and use the promo code HOH, and you get a 7-day free trial on us to see if you like it. And if you decide to stay after the 7 days, you get an additional $1.50 off of your membership every month. That's GasDigitalNetwork.com, promo code HOH, and get a 7-day free trial. Let's get back to the show.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, your host for the House of Hardcore podcast, Tommy Dreamer!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the House of Hardcore podcast. I'm your host, Tommy Dreamer, and this week, I got a shooter, Bobby Fish.
Same shit. Can I say that on you?
You can say whatever you want.
Same shit, different day, sir.
I like that you popped when I said that you were a shooter. You are. You train MMA stuff.
I was just training today.
See, I know. I watch your style. Come on now. Yeah. I should also say House of Hardcore OG because you worked a few of my shows as well. But
I did way back when. I you might have been. I think House of Hardcore might have been my last.
Yes.
Before I went to NXT.
Yep. And we'll get to all of that. Question I ask everybody, what got you hooked on the lovely world of professional wrestling?
Oh, I thought you were going to say heroin.
Well, say we'll heroin. Get into that
heroin
too.
Heroin got me hooked on. I started watching it with my father. For sure. And I do remember my first memories of it, you know, and they're kind of vague, especially at this point. But I remember being in traffic going to what I believe was either the Glens Falls Civic Center or the RPI Fieldhouse. And it was my dad, my uncle, some of my cousins, and Bob Backlund was in a limo stuck in the same line of traffic that we were. I don't know that that was what hooked me. In fact, it definitely wasn't, but that was like my earliest memory of it. I'd say as far as what hooked me was seeing NWA, the Crockett years. I mean, I was a Hulkamaniac and all that stuff, but in upstate New York, once TBS and like Turner Broadcasting came on, and this was like late 80s, early 90s, to see the NWA stuff, you know, Dusty and all his glory and that stuff, it was like, whoa. I don't want to say, I don't know. In my adolescent mind, it was, oh, this shit is real. Where WWF was a little bit more cartoony at the time.
And still real. Hello. Who you think we're talking to? Come on now.
Pardon me.
And according to some of your opponents, they say you think it's real too. Oh,
but I'm bum.
Did you have a specific
real to
guy?
Me, damn it.
Exactly.
Yes.
Did you have a specific guy? Like, who was your guy?
I was a big Sting fan. I think Dusty might have been the first guy that like hooked me because it was gritty. He was gritty, and he didn't like picture was a little smoky, and it was Saturday mornings, and I don't know, they were probably showing a Starrcade or something, and here's Dusty bleeding buckets on a Saturday morning, and you know, 13, and I just I loved it.
Yeah, that was my guy. He's my hero. He's the reason I'm in this. When you talk about the difference, the polished and the grainy, WWE was that always to me too. Like I would always say, like, not that I knew what sports entertainment was, and I was a big fan as well, big Hulkamaniac, but it was that the NWA, like you said, was real, and it was just like WWE looked like a fine television show or a movie, as opposed to NWA had that underground real feel to it, where they were talking the people in at times too. It was just two totally different products that I hate that the fact that there's generations of people that won't get to see that, because I feel like everyone tries to follow the norm, as and they shouldn't. It should just, if your team is going one way, if WWE's the machine, then the other company's got to go the other way. And at times it was going that way, but then at times I feel they're back on the same path, which I hate, because it needs to be different. I mean, I've done a lot of these. I've done way too many of these House of Hardcore podcasts where everyone talks about why they got into it, but it's always for different reasons why we view professional wrestling and why we love it.
Yeah. Yeah. The story for everybody is unique.
Yep. I love everybody's journey, and I'm sure I'll find out some different things about you that I didn't know. So you grew up upstate New York.
Yep.
How do you then want to pursue? Because you're around the time too, internet is how do you become a professional wrestler?
I got into, I found it as a career late by wrestling standards. You know, I went to college. I wanted to play football. By the time I got a bachelor's degree in English, and by the time I was done, I kind of saw the writing on the wall that like I wasn't going to make a living playing football. I worked out for a couple of arena teams, which I probably still would have had to have a job in the off season, and I didn't make either team. And I was just kicking around. I was bartending and trying to figure out what it was going to be. Any attempt at a 9-to-5 or something regular just didn't feel right. I was working for a marketing company, and that was the first time like I had really traveled outside of New York State. I happened to be at a FYE. I don't even know if they still have those. But I saw the Dynamite Kid's autobiography. It caught my eye. And the reason was because I was a big Dynamite fan, but when he left WWF, I just thought he stopped wrestling. You know, and like you said, it wasn't the internet age. Like you didn't really. So I was unaware of the career he had in Japan prior. I was unaware of the stuff he did in Canada after, et cetera, et cetera. So I read that book. It was right around the same time that Tough Enough had come out. So it was a bit more exposed as to like, okay, how you do this. When I was a kid, I had no idea.
Right.
So I knew like I had to get trained, blah, blah, blah. I found a guy by the name of Jeff Leibolt. Long story short, ended up with DeVito, Tony DeVito, in that way in Newburgh, New York, and started training with him. And
I totally forgot about DeVito and your connection. And as soon as you said it, and then I was like, of course it was Tony in upstate New York.
Yeah.
He had that whole little area for a long time. And Tony helped out a lot of guys. You know, he's another one of those uncredited warriors out there.
Unsung hero in my world, because like I would call him periodically over the years, and like things that he said to me that really didn't make sense to me at the time, mm-hmm. but I acted like they did. They made sense to me all these years later, and you know, I would send call him or send him a picture of something that I saw and you know, just let him know that, you know, the little pearls of wisdom, I use some of them still to this day.
You have no clue how many times I say, gosh, Johnny Rods was right. Ugh, yeah. Paul Heyman was right. Ugh, Vince was right. Like all these people that helped me or like, you know, their philosophies. I'm like, oh my gosh, they were right. I'm wrong. Like still to this day. I love it though. It's like you said, you send the guy a picture and stuff. He lives down by you, I think, now in Florida.
He does. I moved to Ormond Beach like a year ago, and we did an independent a few months back. I think we're two exits away from each other.
Nice.
We're close.
So now you're doing indies. What is your first break in the biz?
I gotta consider it Pro Wrestling Noah in Japan. I was probably about 5 years in. That was the first time that I, you know, made money that was like money, you know.
Right.
I was only getting paid when I would go over for tours, so it wasn't like I could lose the jobs on the side. I think I started substitute teaching at that time because Noah would contact me and I'd have like a month's notice or whatever that they were bringing me over, but it'd be for, you know, 3 weeks, sometimes a month. And then I'd come home and I kept losing jobs, but, substitute teaching was something that like once you were in the system, you could black yourself out on the days that you weren't going to be there. So like, I could go away for a month, come back. But Noah was definitely the first break that I had in the business.
I like is it irony where you read a book, you don't know about a career about somebody else's in Japan, and now you go to Japan. This is why I love wrestling. Like it's such an amazing journey. To go back to that book, which is another really, really good book. I had broken my back and my neck at the same age as Dynamite. And I remember reading that book when I was hurt.
Yeah.
Worst book to read because, you know, you see the picture of him in a wheelchair and everything. And it was one of those defining moments for me where I was like, and I'm in the ECW. I was like, I don't know, like, cause I was facing surgery. Do I want to not have surgery? And I'm just like, ugh, like,
yeah.
But that book, a very, very good read for all our wrestling listeners out there. I remember crying reading that book because of the current state of how I was. And I was like, I don't want to be in a wheelchair.
Right.
So then after Noah is Ring of Honor.
I'd say chronologically that was about it. I had a couple inwards to Ring of Honor previous to getting the, you know, to working regularly there that none of them just really panned out. And that was around the same time that I was working for Noah. And then Noah's business had slowed down quite a bit. Pro wrestling for me, I had both of my daughters at the time. And pro wrestling for me it had kind of plateaued. So I was thinking, you know, maybe I would at least stop pursuing it as much as I was, and maybe just take, I had an opportunity for a decent job, like 60 grand a year. And I was thinking about, you know, doing that and just wrestling as a hobby here and there. And Ring of Honor at that time, Delirious had taken over. I knew him in passing, and I remember that the weekend that I was going in for them, I was like, okay, well, if this pans out, then, you know, maybe we'll see where it goes. And if it doesn't, like, I think it was a job at Target. It was a warehouse distribution center, and that was right near where I lived in Saratoga Springs, New York. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to take it, you know. But as fate would have it, things worked out that weekend. I think I worked QT Marshall in a dark and then did something else, and they were going to bring me back for more dates, but, you know, nothing really regular. That started to kind of come together over the next couple months.
And they said, I'll give you 60,000 and 1 cent more. And you said, I'm in.
I think, you know, I'll be honest. I think my first contract with them, and I don't want to blow up spots here, but I think was 40 grand a year. But I was blown away by the fact that, like, wait a second. You mean you can get a wage that pays you, you know, it's not per appearance? That can happen in pro wrestling? Like, wait a second. And that was the realization of, like, wow, I guess I can maybe make a living doing this.
And then you're allowed to also do indies and stuff like that. If just a total sidebar for what we're talking about, like how you started, how I started, completely different. And that whole thing, like, you know, contracts weren't guaranteed when I started. For you, it was a little different. But if you really do think about, like, there's a new whole new generation of wrestlers that are making money outside, like, as a wrestler, but making a living with all the other things that come with it, whether it's Twitch, whether it's all these t-shirts, cameos, all these things that weren't available to us, where I don't think they realize. I mean, you also said you had a family, man. And this isn't like you pursuing your dream. You have other people that rely on you for your success and, you know, putting a roof over their head, paying bills, which is a lot of responsibility that is just like, it's so taxing on your brain. Like, and I'm going to give up, which is sort of kind of my dream, but I have to, I always say real life gets in the way of our dreams.
Yeah.
Well, it's awesome that you were able to do that. And they were able to be there for you, whether you're driving an old classic or a real piece of junk, the car market is hot. And that's why I want to tell you about rockauto.com, the one-stop shop for all parts you need to keep your car on the road and in pristine condition. Rockauto.com has been in business for over 20 years. They have every part you need in stock at amazing prices. No reason to run around to different stores, websites, or auto shops. RockAuto has what you need in stock now. And guess what? RockAuto.com prices are always reliably low. That means they do not change prices based on what's going on in the market. This isn't like an airplane ticket, a hotel, or beef at the grocery store. You won't need to constantly check to see if what you need is available and if now is the best time to buy. Rock Auto keeps it simple and has everything in stock at reliably low prices. So go to rockauto.com. They make it easy to maintain your car and save money. It feels good knowing your car is in top condition. Once more, rockauto.com for great prices on auto parts, and tell them we sent you. There's a box when you check out to put it in our show name, and that's the House of Hardcore podcast. The prices are too good for promo codes, so let's get back to the show. I don't know how long you were there for in Ring of Honor. Was it a while?
We did at least like 5 years, and then that was kind of where Kyle and I were put together as a tag team, and then that's when New Japan had requested to bring us over. And at that time I was still working for NOAH as far as I knew, but their tours had slowed way down. The money was, you know, money wasn't good, so people were doing less tours. And I think I may have done, you know, one or two tours the previous year. So when New Japan came knocking, it all worked out, you know. NOAH, I had their blessing, and when we started working for New Japan, and then things really seemed to really kick off for us once we started working for New Japan and Ring of Honor.
Do you have a favorite moment in Ring of Honor?
I mean, there's a few. Like, we had a couple matches. I say we because I'm talking about Kyle and the tag team. We had a really, man, I get confused. We had a few different good ones with the Bucks that really seemed to be such a clash of styles,
right?
That it the chemistry was not expected, but it was just there instantly. So those were really cool. Those are definitely highlights. I'll say winning the TV title, I guess, kind of, I don't know, because I'm not one of those guys. Like, I mean, I know what this is. Like, somebody wrote you in.
Yeah, but you also, I get that, but it's also they wrote you in because they felt like you're good at what you do. I think that that's a big, like, you could be, it's different. Like there was wrestlers back in the day that looked the part but couldn't do it, but then it was like, well, we'll put them with guys who can make them look good, as opposed right. to especially a Ring of Honor style that you were, yes, you're, no one actually wins a title in wrestling, but it's, you're chosen because you can carry that ball in those people's eyes.
Yeah.
So,
well, you know, that one sticks out because it was Tomohiro Ishii from New Japan. And like I said, we had started working for New Japan at that time, and Ishii was, you know, one of the top guys there. So I had the blessing of New Japan to go over on him. And I had, you know, obviously the backing from Ring of Honor. They were going to push me in a singles capacity. So, and at that time we really had a lot of, like, you know, I mean, we had a lot of influence, if not all influence, on what our gimmick was, you know, and our promos, and, you know, like, Hunter really gave us a lot of run in that way. So we were able to, our art was our art. You know,
nice. So then from there is NXT.
Yeah.
Yep. Total, another sidebar. I remember I didn't even work in WWE, and Mark Carano called me up about you.
Really?
And it was this whole, who the fuck is Bobby Fish? And I was just like, oh, Bobby's a great guy. No, well, he's like, well, he was booked, and then he wasn't booked, and now we're signing him. And I was like, I don't know anything about this, but I'll never forget a random call from a good old WWE, and who the fuck is Bobby Fish?
You know, it's not a name you hear every day.
Shout out to the stooge, Mark Carano, top stooge. Yeah. So NXT, where I felt some of your best work was done. I love the whole Undisputed era. I mean, the black and gold was off the charts. It was what it was. It was a complete brand. It reminded me of ECW in the sense of it was different. It was that raw, that gritty, and you saw all these talents that were flourishing in other places all come together. Did you feel that same way?
I did. I mean, it's a window in my career that I cherish that time. I feel like we were, you know, it's kind of surreal to think back to, like, you know, finally get signed there, whatever. And at certain points along the way, I definitely resigned myself to, like, yeah, you know, my career is going to be in Japan. It's going to be here. But, you know, WWE was not going to be in the cards.
Man, so how old were you, think, if you remember?
When I signed?
Yeah.
One.
Wow. That's awesome. Yeah.
So if somebody had told me, I don't say this to many people. I'll say this to you, Tom. You're a special one. Like, on the come up, because I think you can relate. Like, if you were not 6 foot and you were north of 30 years old, you know, WWE really wasn't in your cards. And right. it changed over the years, but, like, if somebody had said to me all the way back then, you know, you're going to get there and you're going to make what you're going to make and blah, 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 but it's not going to happen until you're 41. I'd have been like, you're smoking crack.
Right.
Like, that's, please, because it's not funny.
That's the Triple H regime where, and that's why I said it was based upon your talent and your ability that got you there. And that whole journey, though you said you started late, but I mean, you're really good in the ring, and that whole group clicked and you made a name for yourself, and it's all about the journey. Right. And 100%. I feel that's a trip. That's the Triple H regime. Whoever helped you get in there, your work backed up what you did. And that's, and that, again, that whole, you guys reminded me of a shooter version of DX. You know, what you guys did, and that faction was so key in the development for that brand, especially the you know, black and gold brand.
To be honest, when when we were making our way in, and Hunter asked us, you know, what we would pick for ourselves as a gimmick. And Kyle and I thought we would tag, but we had no real thoughts about a group. So when they had first presented the idea, and at that time it was just the three of us, it was Kyle, myself, and Roddy was already there, but had his own thing established. It was kind of like, okay, when's the other shoe going to drop? Like, this is a rib. But it was their idea to put us together. And I truly, like, through that time, the three of them are three of my legit best friends in the business. So work was, it was, I won't even call it work.
Yeah.
It was so much friggin' fun. And there were numerous times that we would sit in the locker room and look at each other and be like, we get paid for this. This is a mind fuck. This is crazy.
There's a famous book that was turned into a movie, The Rookie, and it's The Oldest Rookie. The guy who, I think Dennis Quaid played it, but he finally makes it to the majors. I think he was 40 when he gets finally signed and pitches for the Tampa Rays. He was out of baseball. You never left this, but it's fascinating because I didn't know. You look really, really young still. You got a good physique. You got some good fish genetics. And that fish oil works. Everyone talks about it.
The Italian.
That
olive oil or something. I don't know.
Again, and I'll keep saying it, that group was so over. And it was four guys. You were over like the Four Horsemen. Individually, everybody's over. As tags, everybody's over. And it was such a key core group for a brand that everybody loved. And I mean, now you're wrestling in front of, like, I loved when, you know, even though they were running up against pay-per-views, you know, with WWE, but I mean, packed houses everywhere, Brooklyn, you know, Toronto. It's insane to think, like, back-to-back sellouts, like, you know, for these shows. It was such a cool, cool time. Of course, everything comes to an end. Especially, I think COVID was a big factor with a lot of that as well. You got a favorite NXT moment?
Ooh, a few. I would probably say the second War Games, for whatever reason, all four of them were special. To think that knowing what a fan Hunter was of the NWA, you know, the stuff I talked about before. So he had to be a fan of the War Games, and knowing that, like, in this generation's rendition of the War Games, we were almost his horsemen, right, is another surreal realization that I've come to. And those four, we were kind of synonymous with them. The second one, I don't know. I feel like we kind of had our bearings a little bit, and we were able to get real creative with that one. I really love this, the second War Games. And then there's another match. I believe it's TakeOver Philadelphia. It was me and Kyle. We opened up the show against AOP. That one's pretty special to me. Paul Ellering was ringside for them. Right. And they were basically LOD, and we got to be Arn and Tully. Like, I mean, talk, just playing the role. And, you know, it was like being a kid and playing. Like, I almost didn't feel like it was me.
I love it. It's surreal. And I love the fact that you're realizing that you're having these moments in the moment, because a lot of people don't. Like, I'm one of them. I never really enjoyed ECW until it was gone, but then I missed it. Like, it was the girlfriend that broke up with me because it wasn't there anymore. But I'm cool that you're very cool that you're able to have those moments. I didn't start having those moments because they were so far few between for me in WWE, is why I really, really appreciated them. Like, crowds, good matches, like length of matches, and you did. Your group carried a brand. Now your time is up in NXT. You go to AEW. A nice little run. You're there about a year.
Yeah. Yep.
The buzz that when that whole group, and it was a lot of speculation, again, it's also COVID, there's injuries, there's a lot of things that I feel go south with that. But there was a lot of, again, moments, but it wasn't what it was. And it was like, it was rumblings like of like everyone wanted to see how, because that group was so prominent in, you know, NXT, would it happen in AEW? And I just, you know, for whatever reason, it didn't happen. Do you, you got a favorite thing happening in AEW or?
I mean, I really, you know, cause it was one of the first times in a long time, and especially on national TV, that I can remember having a good lengthy match with a quality opponent. This one was a young opponent, but who just gets it, in my opinion. But Darby Allin, the match that I had with him, I think it was one of my last ones with AEW. You know yourself, when you talk about things before, you kind of get an idea how things are going to go. And it was a good feeling from the jump. And we went out and yeah, it was give and take, and it was fun, and it was everything wrestling was supposed to be, you know, and it was everything wrestling was for me numerous times formerly. And I really enjoyed it. I had no idea that that was, you know, kind of my last one there. But I, you know, that wouldn't have made any difference or whatever. I don't have a moment there as much because, you know, like you said, the rumblings, there were, you know, once Kyle came in, it was like, oh shit, we're going to get Red Dragon in the Bucks. And I still feel like money was left on the table.
Yeah, it was.
From a tag team standpoint, you know, there was the Bucks, FTR, us, some of these new teams, the Gun, the Sun Billy, and blah, blah, blah. Like, you really had a good, interesting mix of tag teams. And I'm, you know, it's easy to play armchair quarterback here and book the territory, right? But I was just thinking, okay, we got to do a Crockett Cup type pay-per-view where it's just all tags. Never happened. That, like, you know, that sucks. And then for us to, I mean, Matt and Nick, you know, we really never got another match with them. We did some, I think it was a triple threat tag, but yeah, I mean, some of that stuff I have little regrets for, which if they did happen, potentially could have, you know, replaced, but I, you know, work. Oh, and shit, how could I forget this one? Sting, getting to work with Sting. Are you shitting me?
Yeah.
Like 14-year-old me. Again, another one of those moments that would have been like, you're out of your friggin' mind. Like when I went to the Altamont Fair, I was 13 years old and they were doing the airbrush shirts. I had his sports or his Wrestling Illustrated cover airbrushed onto a t-shirt. And the year before, I had it done for Brian Bosworth. And then here I am in the AEW locker room after Sting came up and complimented me about my work. We had a conversation where I retold him that story, and then he's talking to me about, you know, the interaction between him and Brian Bosworth. Like, whose fucking life is this?
Yeah,
just nuts.
First of all, I never met Sting until I went to TNA, and when I started getting in the biz, Dusty's my hero, but when I got in the business, you know, you think you're smart how your gimmicks would be, I wanted to be a cross between Sting and Muta. Because that was the biggest Sting mark. I don't ever meet him until TNA, and I'm in my one shot. I'm in a battle royal, and I swear to you, all my tunnel vision for Sting, and I come in there and I just jump on him and I go, "Give me the Sting comeback," and he's like, "What?" And I start doing his stuff to him, and I'm like, "Until he's taken it, I'm gonna keep doing my best version of Sting." And when Sting lit me up with his Sting punches, you know, the punch left, right, I was in pure Mark Heaven, and I was in, you know, 20 plus years. I love Sting and the business that he's doing at his age. I'm 51. He's 62. And just, I love it. I do. And he doesn't need the money. He does it because he loves this industry. And I love that you were able to have that moment too. Cause I say this to everybody, like you're a football guy. Who's your favorite football player? You have one?
Brian Bosworth.
Awesome.
He was
Brian Bosworth. he can never try to sack Russell Wilson, who's currently playing today. But in our world, he can.
Right.
You can fight Sting. Total other sidebar, which wrestling fans could go and look. Go and you'll pop for this because you know the guy. Halloween Havoc in Philadelphia. I don't know the year, but look it up and you will see a fan dressed as Sting, hard camera, doing Sting stuff. That fan is the Sandman. Beating his chest all throughout the show in full face paint. Blonde hair. Oh, it's great. Shout out to you, Hack.
The end of the day.
And that's how we all should be. I'm going to end it on that. Oh, no, I don't want to end it on that. It's funny. You came to Impact recently. You showed a lot of personality on the microphone, and that's kind of how I know you. And a lot of the talent know you as that as well. But fans in the ring, I think, know you as like this straight shooter type of like fighter, as opposed to like, man, like when you walked into the locker room, all the Ring of Honor guys started doing like galloping noises on your leg, on their legs, and like gave you this nice intro. And like, you have a unique personality, which I always saw. And, you know, you and I always got along great, but it's just, I think it's the different side of what people perceive as opposed to what people, you know, really know, the character as opposed to the person.
My theory on it is this, is the highest profile stuff you do is under the WWE umbrella. And on my way to getting there, like in Ring of Honor and whatever, where we had, you know, kind of influence, I created this character and I talked a lot and I never stopped running my mouth. And a lot of times when Kyle and I tag together now, you'll hear me at ringside. I just talk shit the whole time because that's my comfort zone. My father was a ball buster. He was sarcastic as hell. And he comes out of me whether I want him to or I don't. When I was in NXT, within a couple months of doing promos as the group, I was kind of Iggy'd that like, hey, Adam's, you know, the piece that's going to do the talking. And then Heyman actually came in and had just talk to us about some stuff. And one of the things he mentioned was like, you know, you have a role and you guys are great in this group and you're great individually. And the key is going to be bringing out those, you know, like highlighting the differences between each of you. And so I'm looking at that going, all right, well, if Adam's kind of the mouthpiece, I know I can talk, like I know I can blow, but like, why am I going to compete with that when I can be something else and Kyle can be something else? And then eventually Roddy came in. And so like I was playing my role and my role wasn't, you know, okay, so I'm in Top Gun. I'm not, well, no, Tom Cruise isn't Maverick. I'm Maverick. Like, no, you're paying, you're the one signing my check. Like I'll be the best of what you want from me that I can give you. So I kind of parked a lot of that stuff and I purposely was quiet and added color here and there. And then I think because fans, new fans, you know, the turnovers there, they saw a guy doing this version and they weren't privy to the stuff that came before that. And the fact that I can talk and I don't get tongue tied. And I mean, for crying out loud, I was an English major, you know, it's not to say I'm smarter than anybody else by any stretch. Christ, I'm definitely dumber. Like, I'm dumber than my wife for sure. She corrects me all day long. But it just, yeah, I think that that's what happened. And then people forgot that, oh, he can talk.
You showed so much personality. And I love the fact, like when you were out there, you smiled. You look like an old school lounge host that was out there to like welcome the crowd, warm everybody up and like, hey, by the way, you're going to see this. But like you had that comfortability and you already said it because I hadn't seen you like, man, it's been so long that I've actually had this in my hand to do this because like you were known as this. And I did. I love the whole segment. And you know, now that you're in Impact Wrestling, it's going to be, you know, in your hometown. So I look forward to some cool things happening for you, as well as the other stuff to say in this business, as you can very much, you're walking testament. Never say never. about opportunities or matches that can happen, because in some places and universes they can. And I do love that. How can fans find you on socials?
On socials, the Bobby Fish on Instagram and Twitter, same handle. The Undisputed Podcast with Bobby Fish. We've been dropping them on Wednesday mornings, sometimes afternoon, depending on the edit. But those Pro Wrestling Tee Store, we are actually dropping Wednesday the first podcast t-shirt. Design has been approved and we're going to put it out there. Probably start filtering some stuff, involving the podcast to my Pro Wrestling Tee Store for a while until we figure out, you know, where else we're going.
Well, that's awesome. Well, look forward to seeing this weekend. And thanks for being a guest on this week's episode of the House of Hardcore Podcast. See you, buddy.
Thank you, sir.